Welcome to the Pro Wrestling Outsiders Show, where we have one-sided conversations and unsolicited opinions. Here's your host, Kyle Joseph.
Welcome to the Pro Wrestling Outsiders Show. Once again, I'm your host, Kyle. We have a big episode today. We have Money in the Bank and the aftermath of that. We have AEW's Fyter Fest, still getting caught up on NXT. We are at NXT TakeOver In Your House. And on the last shot, we're going to review AEW's brand new mobile game, Elite General Manager. So please stick around. We got a lot going on. All right, it is Money in the Bank time. But before we get there, I do want to call out the return of Finn Balor to the main roster. Don't really know yet what's going to happen there. Super excited to see how he goes. Will he be involved in AJ at all? Are they going to stay clear of that? Are they going to mix him up with kind of other people that he mixed up with NXT? Or are we going to get some fresh matchups? Who knows, but it's something I'm really looking forward to because I certainly do like Prince Balor, Prince Devlin, whatever you want to call him, versus the other one, which was the creature, the whatever, the demon. But back to Money in the Bank. We had the Mysterios versus the Usos in the pre-show match. Mysterios had a new intro. Thought it was really odd. I'm not a big Mysterios fan, so I can take it or leave it. But Jey Uso, with his Rufio hairstyle, did come through with the win with Jimmy. Makes total sense to me when you factor in where they're going with the tribal chief and whatnot. If we move into the women's Money in the Bank that opened the show, I take a couple issues with it. First things first, it wasn't very strong in my opinion. There was a lot of bad spots. It seemed like they were rushing to try and get to that big spot instead of taking their time, slowing things down. Maybe having a couple less of those big spots to really nail each one properly. And also at one point in time, they had signature move after signature move, and I don't like that at all. It seems so forced and really doesn't match the flow of everything else going on, so I would sooner rather not have that. Two call-outs, though. One is Liv Morgan. She put on a fantastic job in this one. I think she really shined, really showed the potential that she can have with being out on her own, getting away from the Riot Squad. I was actually surprised. I thought they might have dumped her shortly after, but I stand corrected. And then Alexa Bliss. I'm not sure what's going on. Where do we go with her? She's supposed to have these, you know, superpowers or whatever you want to call it. And she's still getting beat. She's just more of a weirdo than anything else. I want to see something or I want to have this go away. One of the two, but something needs to change. We did have Nikki Ash as the winner. I think that was... I think it's a surprise for a lot of people. I had said that I thought Asuka was going to win, but or I wanted Naomi as well. But it'll be interesting to see how we go through this one. Kind of a spoiler alert. On Raw, she did come in and take over and is now the new champion. I hope that this is not one of those title runs where it's next week on Raw or the very next pay-per-view, SummerSlam, she loses it and then we forget all about it. I feel like if you're going to go through that struggle of winning the Money in the Bank, turning around, and putting the effort, and then all of a sudden losing it, it just seems like a waste to me. We had the WWE Championship match between Bobby Lashley and Kofi Kingston. It was, to me, a super important match for Bobby to just kick the living crap out of Kofi, get himself back on the winning ways, get himself back as dominant. I really like Bobby as the champion. I think he has a look. I think he has a style. I think he has the strength, and I think he can actually, when wants to, get on the mic, and that's important. So for me, he's an all-around complete champion who people aren't going to like, so there's lots of opportunities to get your baby faces coming up and trying to battle and whatnot. It's important to me, too, to kind of call out that Kofi needs to move on. The Kofi Mania aspect is done. I even think... at some point in time, do they continue the tag space or is there something else that Kofi can be doing? There was no Xavier Woods at the match, which I thought was surprising, but I'm not sure if that means anything or it was just, you know, simple scheduling or whatever. But women's Raw championship match, Charlotte Flair, Rhea Ripley. There's a couple big things for me. One is the natural selection off the top rope from Flair. Haven't seen that before. Love the effort. Love to see what happened. And then Flair won. But what I call out the most is she was doing the figure eight, and Rhea Ripley wasn't really selling it. She did a great job of selling the knee injury. She does a great job of selling it on Raw. But why aren't you selling that? It was kind of just a hemming and hawing, slightly tapping at the knee. We had the men's Money in the Bank match. Shinsuke doing the top ladder armbar was super impressive because, you know, at any point in time, things could have happened. I do love that Jinder's interference with Drew. I was going to call him Drew Gallows. Drew McIntyre kind of keeps their storyline going, pushes him away from the championship picture, keeps that going. Ricochet put on another phenomenal performance, absolutely phenomenal. His control while he's in the air, his ability to catch the top rope just perfectly enough to be able to continue whatever the next move was always impressive. And I'm, as things go on and as he stays in this type of realm, I'm enjoying more and more of what he's doing. I just don't want him to go down the full Lucha style where he do weird jumping back and forth off ropes and before doing anything. It is whatever. The other spot I wanted to call out was Rollins giving a suplex to KO onto the ladder. That looked so vicious and so painful. I got to applaud Kevin Owens. He constantly takes backdrops onto tables and ladders and still manages to keep things rolling. Big E walks away with the championship, or rather, sorry, with the briefcase. Makes sense to me. They're really pushing him on his own. Again, whenever he cashes in, I hope it's worthwhile. I hope it, you know, creates some momentum as opposed to just simply cutting your losses and wasting that on. I thought the main event was really good too with Edge and Roman. A lot of back and forth. You really couldn't tell who was going to win. And if Edge had won, it wouldn't have been necessarily a surprise. And it would have pushed Roman in one direction or another. But for Seth Rollins to get involved, where does that fit? Is that a Shield reunion of sorts? Is he just doing it so he can go after Roman because that's who he wants to face? Obviously, we're going to get an Edge versus Seth story, or even if it's brief for SummerSlam, whatever it is, it makes the most sense. And then we have the return of John Cena. I will tell you that I always love when John Cena shows up. My truck is named John Cena because I just love the name John Cena. If I'm at the restaurant or whatever the case may be, placing an order, ask for my name, it's John Cena. There's a lot of potential in here. We've seen this match before. They did put on a pretty decent match. The interesting part now is Roman is full heel. The problem he's going to run into is John absolutely annihilated him last time on the mic. So they got to figure out a way of protecting Roman. Maybe Paul is where you step in. But if John goes off, then it's really going to have a chance of weakening where we're going with it. So it's still, I'm looking forward to it. It's something we're going to see at SummerSlam. Will we draw it out longer than that? You know, probably not. I do did want to call out that we did have Cena calling Roman an asshole, which was very different. And I think that WWE is starting to try and push the boundaries a little more and allow more of kind of fluidity in the talk. We had the return of the live crowd to Raw. The crowd seemed really unsure of what to do, what to say. The John Cena sucks didn't really get going. There was just other components that were really missing that pop, or they were booing when they should be cheering and cheering when they should be booing, just from a traditional standpoint of how the crowds have interacted. Obviously, people will get back in the swing of things, and we'll go from there. In general, though, the stories are getting too drawn out, too long. It's one thing to have a slow build, but when you start having matches over matches over matches, it gets tiresome. So I would prefer a slow build and to a finish than a quick build to a long, drawn-out finish. Lashley versus Drew McIntyre is a prime example. We saw Lashley come back, really stuck it, get rid of the girls, get rid of the booze, get back to where he's really at, and I really do like that image of them. As I said before, hopefully this carries through. Hopefully we'll see some more dominance. Saw the return of Keith Lee in this match. Fantastic to see Keith Lee back. Still obviously unsure as to what his reasoning for being out. Whether we find out or not, it doesn't matter. He's back. Hopefully he sticks around long term, because I really enjoy what he does, and what he does is extremely impressive. Then obviously we had Goldberg come out as the challenger for Bobby Lashley. I have to continue to ask the question, why? Why do we keep going back to Goldberg as some sort of stepping stone, as some sort of challenge in order to really show the champion, whatever the case may be? Kevin Owens got screwed out of a solid run because of Goldberg versus Brock Lesnar. There is just so much better opportunities and so much other better people than putting in somebody like Goldberg. Karrion Kross made his Raw debut, still rocking the NXT belt, still getting caught up, so we'll see what happens. But the one thing I noticed was that there was no Scarlett at all. So I don't know if this is a carryover from NXT. I'm not at all surprised. I'm just wondering if there's a connection or if it was simply, we're moving you into the main roster and she's going to stay behind. Did think it was a surprising win for Jeff Hardy to do it. Somebody else, Defract, I believe it was, on my Twitter, called out that it seems odd that you would have Jeff Hardy defeat your new big badass. But I will call out that he used the ropes, put on the ropes. So I'm not sure where this is going. Are we getting a bad Jeff Hardy? Is it just simply just happenstance? Whatever the case may be. Last thing to note was the women's rematch. You know how we closed out the show. Again, in this situation, Rhea Ripley did a great job of selling the knee, whether she was trying to do certain moves or just move around the ring. And that's what I like to see, is you're carrying the continuity of this through different matches. Again, I just don't know why she didn't sell it better on Money in the Bank. I will think it's funny that they were calling for Becky Lynch. Charlotte Flair called out that she's at home breastfeeding, to which Becky Lynch responded on Twitter that it's pretty amazing that even when she's at home breastfeeding, she's still the most over superstar in the women's division. So that's really a lot to talk about. Lots going on here. We are moving towards SummerSlam. We kind of have a rough idea of a couple of the matches that are going. We'll see how things go. Will we start seeing more of a title defense for the U.S. title, as we haven't had that one in a while because of Sheamus' face? And what I mean in a while, in the main perspective, not just on Raw, because he's been battling Umberto. And then on the flip side, on the SmackDown side, we have the Intercontinental title. Money in the Bank really kind of took a break on that title. Where are we going to go? Who's going to match up? So we'll have to kind of see where that goes. Will Shinsuke get back into the picture? Will Kevin Owens go back into that matchup? Time will tell. All right, after the break, we're going to get caught back up with NXT. We are rolling along, almost caught up to date. Probably another 3 or 4, maybe 5 episodes, and we'll get there. We are going to talk NXT TakeOver In Your House, along with a couple of little surprises. So please, stay tight and stay tuned. All right, here we go. Before we get into NXT's In Your House, just want to cover off a couple things from the other episodes that I've watched. One, we had Baylor versus Cross 2. I think that they're a great pairing. They have complementary styles. And because Finn is such a great in-ring performer, it is believable that he could beat Karrion Kross, just like it's feasible that Karrion Kross could beat Finn. So super on board with that. Great to see. Unfortunately, it doesn't end as we'd hope, or as I'd hope. It does draw in, I'm assuming, segueing Finn out to the main roster. And we've had a new challenge. And this is where Karrion Kross comes and challenges the other 4 people who should more or less be considered going for the top title. We had a couple of triple threat rules matches. I'm getting a little confused because in some cases there's no DQ and in other cases there is. And even within the match, at one point in time, and I wish I'd remember whose match it was, I just can't think off the top of my head. But the referee called for the guy to let go of a move because the other guy was holding the ropes, but then turned around and let things go outside the ring because, again, it's a no DQ. Just want some consistency. Either call it a special triple threat match where there is no DQ and otherwise a regular triple threat match does, or none of them have a possibility of getting DQ'd and then just, but don't act like there's a chance they could. So consistency, again, it's one of the things I always call for. Continuity, just pick one of the set of rules and let's go through with it. And then we had the return of the Million Dollar Championship. I have mentioned before how much I do enjoy seeing Million Dollar Man back. LA Knight, Cameron Grimes going for the belt. I am very interested to see what happens next. What are we going with this? Is this just going to be one of those belts that's just for show? A la the FTW belt that Taz holds on to. But I guess we'll know. At some point in time, down the road. All right, now we're up to In Your House. I love the retroness. I love bringing back some of the old people just to kind of get you that feel, the old look. And I think there's an advantage for NXT to be able to do this. They did the Halloween Havoc. They did New Year's Evil. And they're coming up with all these things because, A, WWE needs to use these or else they lose these copyrights. And B, they're obscured pay-per-views that are a time of the old. And so they don't really fit into the major pay-per-views that exist for Raw and SmackDown. So here's some freedom to flexibility to really just take it and run with it and see where it goes. So we did have a winner-take-all match, Bronson Reed and MSK versus Ilio Del Fantasma. I do really like that idea, that the winner-take-all. I think it's very, very interesting. It lends itself to various possibilities. Would have been interesting to see what happens if MSK had lost and if because of Bronson or vice versa, if that would have mattered. Obviously, they don't want that. We're going with Bronson Reed. He's going to be your North American champion for a little while, and then we'll see where it goes from there. He's clearly a hot commodity at this point in time. We have the Xia Li situation going on. I'm so over it now. It was really exciting to see what was going to happen when she was. They had the vignettes where it was their master, their mentor, whatever you want to call them, was beating them into shape. And I thought, you know, this could really lend itself to something cool. Then you have this weird person sitting in a chair. And then with Mercedes Martinez, she gets up out of the chair. And I love Mercedes Martinez. And I think she can really push a lot of things. And she can really carry even, you know, weirdo stories. But at the same time, like, this might be too weird. This is like Impact, Su Young going to the dark side, whatever you want to call it, the underworld kind of business, and it just seems odd place to put it in NXT. Speaking of the Million Dollar Championship, Cameron Grimes, LA Knight winning, and then later in a later episode, he goes and he tunes Ted DiBiase, which makes things a lot more interesting. And I really like LA Knight, and when he especially was Eli Drake. And I've said that before, I like that he's carried some of his mannerisms across. I did think to myself and called myself out that this wasn't the first time Cameron Grimes and LA Knight have been in the ring together because they were featured in Impact Wrestling when it was Trevor Lee and Eli Drake. So they clearly have chemistry together. They clearly can put on a good match. We'll see where it goes from here. Does this belt really matter? Time will tell. I did want to call out Gargano's outfit, the HBK reference. Gargano's ring attire, and specifically his entrance attire, is some of my favorite in all of wrestling. I like that he references the comic books or whatever else. And he does it subtly and not too in your face, but it's just a great style. So if we go past In Your House, we're getting caught up now. June 15th was a big episode. It was led by, you know, a heartbreaking moment with the way things were going. There's all this chaos. There's all this, you know, who knows what's going to happen. William Regal is having a hard time controlling things. And then he starts getting emotional. And it's like, okay, well, is this part of you know, an angle, or is it simply he's trying to take a step back and we're going to introduce something else? Samoa Joe steps in. So awesome to see him back. Will we get to see him in the ring? I don't know, because obviously we don't really know the full details of A, why he was gone out for so long, and then obviously why he got cut. And to see him back is muy bueno for me. He's acting as kind of an enforcer. Will we get him and Karrion Kross in the ring together, or will there be other opportunities to get him in? We don't necessarily need to see him in the title picture or anything like that. Either title, I think it's just awesome to be able to have Samoa Joe in the ring. I did really like his run on NXT. I have had a great appreciation for him since he's come to WWE. There was a couple of minor mishaps with Seth Rollins, and then the big one with Tyson Kidd. It is unfortunate. It's the risk you take. But in the end, if you can look past that, if we can say, hey, mistakes happen, let's move on. Samoa Joe has put on some fantastic work. Probably my favorite has to be him and AJ when he was torturing AJ mentally and psychologically and went to their house and all that stuff. Was such a fantastic story. So really, that's it for NXT. I didn't want to go on too much as I'm still getting caught up. So we're probably on June 22nd now. So if I think about it, June 22nd. So then I have the 29th. And then we're having 2 more weeks in July. So yeah, 3 or 4 episodes more and I'll be able to get it caught up live. And there'll be less surprises ruined by just simply being behind. So that ends our NXT portion of the show. Up next, we are going to go with AEW's Fyter Fest Night 2. So please, don't go away. Night 2 of AEW's Fyter Fest. This is the second in a row of specialty nights on Dynamite. We had Road Rager. Then we have 2 nights of Fyter Fest, and then we're going to be Fight for the Fallen next week. And I thought it was nice to have kind of these special pay-per-view type shows that people can get for free because they're already watching and you can bring in new fans. I just don't need to see it every week. At some point in time, we have to get back to normal Dynamite. Hopefully after Fight for the Fire Fallen, whatever it is, we'll get back on track. So we had the first match of Chris Jericho's gauntlet, per se, in order to face off against MJF. I like that the matches are, well, there's only one, but the second one's coming, that there's a difference to them. It's not just the same. You know, he beat Shawn Spears. Makes sense, given what was happening. But then MJF comes out, and he's talking about his next opponent, how he's sadistic, and how he's this, this, and that. And I was like, okay, well, probably like Wardlow is probably who he's talking about or whatever. And then he mentions about stabbing an opponent in the neck. And I was like, oh, this doesn't sound like Wardlow. And then out comes Nick Gage. Nick Gage is the individual who they were talking about who almost killed David Arquette. Nick Gage is featured in an episode of Dark Side of the Ring. It was difficult to watch given the style of wrestling he does. I don't really call it wrestling. It's just straight on fight. I have a buddy, Alan, who couldn't watch it because it's just not his jam. And it's really, really hard to watch. I did a lot of looking away. So I'm interested to see how this is going to go about. I mean, this guy robbed a bank without wearing a mask on a whim. He at one point in time was legally dead after a cut underneath his arm. And then came to and still wanted to go through the match. Like, he's clearly... he has a passion for what he does, but he's definitely losing, you know, a couple screws loose in that very scarred up brain. So really interested to see how we get through this. Chris Jericho is not typically, you know, we've gone through various traditional style hardcore matches, but like I said, Nick's a totally different beast. I did like that at the, you know, later on the show where they go to talk to Chris Jericho and he comes out as the Painmaker. I never watched him in New Japan as the Painmaker. I don't know what kind of matches he was having. My assumption is they were more normal matches and less of the Psycho Light Tube match. So hopefully, even though this is a lot different, this is a potential for a very, very different match. I hope it does still fit in line with the story and isn't becoming just an all-out bloodshed. We continue to carry through this Omega versus Hangman storyline, and when I was talking before about WWE and long builds versus short builds, this is a long build to some extent, and we're not talking months and years, but I like this. This is, let's put them in the ring, but let's not get them, you know, too much together so that we can really work and get anticipated for a match, and then we'll see what happens next. But, I mean, they have history together. They used to be part of the Elite together. I mean, we've gone on cruises with them together. And so there is the history enough, and you can kind of utilize that in your story. I still think that he needs to drop the alcohol, and that is in Hangman. And I am, at the same time, I am getting a greater appreciation for the kind of villain that Kenny Omega can be. In ring, I know people think he's a fantastic performer. I'm kind of a take it or leave it. I know it's a bit of a controversial opinion, but it's mine, and I get to have it. Because it's unsolicited. But yeah, so I mean, we're going to get there. We're going to get that match. How much involvement you're going to have with the rest of the Elite. And luckily, you know, Hangman's got his ability to use the Dark Order as kind of a balancing act. So hopefully we'll get really a good solid match one-on-one. Leading up to the New Japan U.S. Championship, they did bring out, I'm going to pronounce it wrong and know it, Hikuleo, who is the son of Haku, rocking the Bullet Club gear, which is super interesting because I haven't seen that yet in any other crossover outside of Ring of Honor, which doesn't really count. So I know I talked before about the lack of a story, so because you just don't know what these matches are. At the, you know, the end of the show, when we have a Lance Archer versus Jonny Moxley match, there is some of the history that they bring out, which is good. One thing we had a match between Britt Baker and Nyla Rose. Somehow Britt Baker has turned back into a babyface, which I know that was challenging before because JR kind of ruined it. And she was a much better heel, but she's kind of like that anti-hero now, where the things she's saying get so over that people want to hear more of it, and then as a result, are a fan first. It's a tough spot to be in. I do think the way she carries herself, she needs to get back into figuring out how to insult the crowd, or pushing somebody like Nyla Rose into a fan favorite. Figure out what to do, and push it that way, because she does need to get away from crowd favorite. Britt Baker's one of her biggest assets is the fact that she can turn on the nastiness, turn on the meanness, and we can really just see her go down that road as a pure badass. We end up having the press conference for a Santana Ortiz FTR match. I really like the idea of the press conference. It has more of a real feel to it, just like I really enjoyed the Octagon match between Wardlow and Hager. There's kind of like a tiny bit of realism in it, and it offers a different view, and so I really do like the style of having the press conference. Obviously, if they had more cameras going or people asking questions, you know, it could be even more realistic. I didn't care for the who's poor or who's had a tougher upbringing aspect of it, but as a whole, I did like it. We saw Chavo Guerrero return with Andrade. I don't care what you call him. I'm calling him Andrade Idolo. I know he's friends with Jericho, and that makes it logical sense that he would show up. But it's another former WWE guy showing up. And yes, he was WCW first, but, you know, and then TNA and all that stuff. But how many more people can you have on this roster in order to support the shows, have enough people to have consistent matches? Yes, you have the two internet televised shows, but as a whole, you bring in these older wrestlers, how do they help bring up these young guys? Sting does a moderate job because he's not in the ring. He stays on the sidelines. He really lets Darby Allin push forward. That can make sense. Jake Roberts, kind of the same thing, but it's still a distraction. You're utilizing someone's celebrity or someone's history in another company as a way of leveraging them in order to push your product. Your product should be your product. You shouldn't need somebody else's product to push yours. Will we see a turn between, you know, the Death Triangle? Will Pac get turned on by the Lucha Brothers and then they'll join and have this kind of Spanish connection? Maybe we get a little LWO. Who knows? But clearly the Guerreros are all in the AEW space. So really anything is possible. Speaking of returns, rumor du jour, Daniel Bryan, or rather Bryan Danielson, is going to sign with AEW. It seems like such an odd thing to me. I had the impression that he was stepping away from WWE to just get out of the ring and do Be With The Family or whatever the case may be. Clearly, that's not necessarily the truth. There's three sides to everything, you know. So we'll, you know, at some point in time, I'm sure more details will come out if it does, in fact, get finalized. It sounds like maybe August or near the end of August, if it is true that he'll come out. Alan and I were talking. Would love to see it as a surprise, even though, yes, you know, rumors or whatever. But an actual surprise similar to Sting. And, you know, I questioned him and I was like, well, does this make sense to you? And he thought that maybe he's going to go down the road of Sting. One or two matches a year, makes some appearances, both on Dynamite and pay-per-views. He's really there to push somebody else along. That's possible. I'll always see him as Daniel Bryan. I know that he was Bryan Danielson before, and he was a big part of Ring of Honor and such. But what he's done as his character of Daniel Bryan, I can't overlook that. I can overlook Dean. As a result, you know, Johnny Moxley, I can overlook Rusev and Tamiro because their impact for me didn't carry as much, and I don't think it was as big of a scale. Hopefully, if it is true, it all works out and it isn't an embarrassment. All right, last piece, the U.S. title Texas death match. I am not very versed in the death matches. I know they have it on Fire Pro Wrestling, but this was my real kind of first experience. It's not Nick Gage crazy, but it's up there. When you have, you know, your barbed wire and forks and whatever, it's not for me. I am not a fan of that type of wrestling. I can handle hardcore to a certain extent. I can handle, you know, chairs and ladders and things of that nature. Fork, I cannot stand. Yes, I know it's not real. But it's still that idea, you know, you get a lot of stabby, and then there's so much blood, and it's just, it's all too much for me. I know that it had a history with it, so it makes sense in that respect to carry it through. But I don't want it. I don't want forks and brains. I think if you look at Abdullah the Butcher's head, it's pretty unclear it's what's going to happen when you put too many forks in heads. The one thing I did want to call out, though, was Lance Archer using a fan as a weapon. I thought that was super clever to, you know, bump into a guy, pick him up, and throw him at Johnny Moxley. So good. That was probably the highlight of the match for me. It was just so creative, so different. If I were to compare the two, Fyter Fest Night 1 and Fyter Fest Night 2, I have to say that I thought the first night was much more solid. The matches as a whole were big and were proper. Whereas Night 2, it just wasn't as big. I don't know if it was because I wasn't as invested in the Texas death match or whatever the case may be. I did want to call out one other thing, which I got a kick out of, speaking of Sting, was when Sting was on the sideline for Darby Allin and Orange Cassidy was there, and they had a little back and forth with Orange Cassidy's toe tap. I thought that was pretty good. It's not often that I see Sting in that kind of humorous light. So I'm still so on the fence, though, with Orange Cassidy. I appreciate some of his gimmick. It's kind of like Matt Riddle. But at the same time, it's not for me. I don't see him really as a title holder. Part of this goes in and talk. But it's still, it's just, it's not my thing, but I will appreciate a bit of comedy every once in a while. Okay, that's it. NXT, WWE, AEW, all wrapped up. We're about ready to take off. We have the last shot coming. I am going to review AEW's new mobile game, Elite General Manager. So please stay tuned before we wrap things up. All right, first things first, I want to thank those who are listening. I do appreciate it. It does make me feel like I have someone to talk to other than my spouse who cannot stand talking to me about wrestling. So again, I know there is a couple people out there. I do appreciate it. If at some point in time you feel like letting me know if I suck or not, I certainly can take constructive feedback. But here we go, the last shot. I wanted to break down the highly, at least highly for me, anticipated AEW mobile game, Elite GM, Elite General Manager. This is a good segue as we wait on the formal big video game coming from Yuke's. No idea when that's going to happen. But this is something I was looking forward to when I first saw the preview of it. It's something that we've been wanting in, and by we, I mean pretty much everybody, wanting this general manager style back in the WWE games. So this was a good kind of opportunity to kind of get back into that thought process. So when I start from the very beginning, it had a really great tutorial. Everything made sense. You were able to understand every component of the game through kind of a little bit of a career mode. Not really, but at least everything flowed better. And I think there are games out there that do a tutorial where they smash everything together, or they go based on assumptions that you have any, you know, some idea about how the game operates. And I thought this one did a really great job of breaking things down. When I look at the actual game itself, once you've done all your matches or whatever the case may be, they have some pretty goofy match graphics. I understand that you're trying to kind of convey that the decisions you make actually matter. It's such an odd piece. I know it's, like I said, it's to bridge the gap. I don't know if it would be as, the game would be as engaging if you didn't. I don't know if it'd be more engaging if you had, you know, better situation back and forth. But overall, from a visual style, I mean, this is really probably the best you could do in order to maintain that simplistic level of how you're operating this game. When it comes down to actually being the general manager, it is super challenging. I cannot stress that enough. You have to have a lot of patience and really understand what you're doing in order to be successful long term. As far as I've gotten, I cannot get a belt. I don't know how to get them. I haven't gotten there. The outcome of the matches are kind of predetermined. You don't get a say in who wins. They'll just note who's likely to win based on various attributes and how they compare to each other. It doesn't mean it's going to happen. I had a storyline between Jon Moxley and, I want to say, Agent 3 or something like that from Dark Order, and it was supposed to be Jon Moxley winning, and the other guy won 3 times in a row. So you can't really control it, which means that when you're trying to kind of, you can't really move stories along. That's the one thing you don't have. You don't have the ability like you would in a universe mode in WWE, where you can say, hey, I really want this guy to win, or I really want that guy to win. They have a lot of different matches. You have some different promos that you can bring in. You have some, you know, kind of chair shots or whatever you want to bring in that impact the matches, that really push how many fans you're getting, how many stars you're getting, how much money you get, things of that nature. So there is a lot of variety. Everything you do, though, costs money. Every match you want to put on costs money. The more wrestlers in the match, the more money it costs. The certain promos or certain things in the background cost more money. And so you have to really manage that with how much money you're bringing in versus how much money you're spending. Which comes to the big piece that I have, and the piece that I find most challenging, and I don't necessarily think that I agree with it. There's probably some limitations with the mobile aspect of it, but the wrestling values don't make any sense to me. I don't know what the rhyme or reason is or what the rationale is, but you have some wrestlers that are quote-unquote valued much higher than the others, and part of it comes down to contract length. you don't get to set the terms, but the terms are kind of like 4 weeks, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, 12 weeks kind of thing. So you can use those wrestlers for X number of weeks, but it really, it's hard to manage which wrestler is worth the most, which one makes sense to sign. How do you manage them over the course of their, you know, their time with you? And that's why I really think it is challenging. I wish there was more of like kind of a easier mode, for lack of a better term, in that maybe every contract length was the same, or the values made a little bit more sense, or maybe you had a little more money, or whatever the case may be. But you can get broke real fast. And there isn't really an opportunity to do a slow build, I find, because the values are so off that there really is, you need some big marquee names. So if I'm to wrap things up, bring it all together in a nice little package, I would say it's absolutely a great addition to the WWE, AEW, whatever other kind of comic-y wrestling environment when it comes to mobile gaming. It is very different than anything WWE is producing, so that's a bonus. It isn't. There are other mobile games that do the kind of general manager style, but it's so much better when you can recognize the characters, you understand what's going on. They're putting on some sort of live show, live matches. I'm not too sure how that all works out, but time will tell. Am I going to play this on a daily basis? Probably not. Am I going to keep it on my phone and bring it out every once in a while? Absolutely. The game is free, so you really can't go wrong with trying it. I have to suggest or recommend that you do, and then decide for yourself whether it's something kind of sits at the top of your playlist, or if it's there, you know, just in case you want to pick it up, or if it's removing your phone altogether. So that's it. That brings us to the end of the last shot. That brings us to the end of the show. I really do appreciate once again that you're listening to my voice. And next week we shall see what comes of AEW's Fight for the Fallen, WWE's Road to SummerSlam, and my hopeful ability at Caught Up Live, and we can go from there for NXT. Once again, this is Kyle here. Thank you so much. We'll talk next time.